This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
This is your current affairs program, The Rainbow Report, on Joy 94.9.
Good evening, Doug Pollard here again, and how can we not talk about the bushfires? The gay community, like everyone else, has gone to work raising funds for a whole range of appeals relating to the bushfire, and it sparked, if I can use that word, considerable debate. Should we be giving money to the Red Cross, for example, given their blood services' attitude towards gay men donating blood? What about Vinnies or the Salvos and their connections to anti-gay religious groups? Well, a veritable shedload of money has been raised to help people, but what about animals, and in particular wildlife? That's another issue too. Now, with fundraising in mind, with me in the studio tonight is Felicity Brinchwitz, who's leading a contingent of Victorians to Mardi Gras under the banner of Australians United, raising funds for bushfire victims. We'll talk to her later in the show. And also later in the show, Owen Wilson of the Bendigo Bank. They've also raised a great deal of money for bushfire victims through their community fund. So we thought we'd talk to them about what that community fund is and how it works. Lynn Morgane from the Also Foundation. Now, they were about to host a rural forum in Ballarat, but they've cancelled it due to the bushfires. They are also, however, raising funds for a bushfire appeal, so, along with Joy. So we'll talk to Lynn about that later in the show too. Taking a break from the bushfires, we have a report on the case of the lesbian mums who got two babies when they only ordered one. And with me in the studio, the irrepressible Cathy Anderson. Hello, Cathy.
Oh, good evening, Doug. Irrepressible. I like that. Thank you.
Yes. Well, I thought, you know.
Makes me sound like a jumping castle. Keep me down. Douglas, I love it.
Oh, come on. I think it suits you. And just in case anyone thinks there aren't enough lesbians on the show tonight, we also have Andy Noonan from Southern Star. Hello, Andy.
Thanks for having me. I feel very special.
Yeah, but you're not irrepressible.
Oh, I'm sure you can manage with a bit of practice. Staying with the feminine theme, Kay Serra. She remembers the time, probably when she was still in a training bra, I suppose, when her family had to flee the bushfires with only the bone china they could carry. She'll have her thoughts on the bushfire issue towards the end of the show. Now, we begin with a report on the case of the lesbian mothers who only wanted one baby but ended up with two. They've now won significant damages from the obstetrician involved. Justin Ellis from The Wire on Sydney radio station 2SER filed this report, and he began by asking their lawyer, Thina Kiprianu, partner at Pamela Coward & Associates, why the case had aroused so much media interest.
I think that the media was more interested in it because of the plaintiff's sexual orientation and because it involved the birth of a child. Neither of those issues really had much to do with legal issues.
And so do you think that this case raises the question of whether there are sufficient guidelines or agreements between obstetricians and people who are undergoing IVF treatment?
It raises issues about how patients' wishes should be recorded and transmitted to the people who need to know, I suppose. It's about the system of checking that the client's wishes, the patient's wishes, are followed.
And in this case, they weren't?
No, they weren't. Through an error that was admitted. It was admitted that it was an error.
The couple will put the $317,000 awarded to them toward the education of their second child. But the ruling has still angered various sections of Australian society, most passionately Christian groups. Glynis Quinlan from the Australian Christian Lobby.
I'm sure that's useful for them in the sense of having it, but it wasn't even in a case where you read the details of being a great need. Apparently they have quite a reasonable income. So it's not so much a need, it's really that they just wanted to have this claim up compelled. You know, and there's also there's the costs of IVF, and that's probably no doubt subsidised by the taxpayer, things like that. They went through a process that they wanted to be part of, and because it didn't go exactly the right way. Now, in terms of why they were able to have their case upheld and all the rest of it, you know, that happened in the ACT because there's no law preventing those sort of wrongful birth claims in the ACT. But if it had been in Queensland, New South Wales or South Australia, they have legislation that prevents damages for wrongful birth. So it's really that the laws in the ACT haven't been changed to reflect community opinion on this issue. And it's really, I think, if you look at community opinion, it wouldn't be a situation where people felt that they were entitled to get those damages.
But ultimately, the case does affect the children involved, a fact not lost on Corey Earlham, a spokesman for the Gay and Lesbian Australian Coalition for Equality.
I have a lot of empathy for the position that's been talked about around the country, which is having a child's a wonderful thing. There are still thousands of couples out there that can't have children, and it's disappointing to see that a child is wrapped up in this situation of medical negligence. But the reality is they held the view that they asked for a particular service, they didn't get that particular service, and therefore they've gone down this path. That's their choice as individuals in Australian society to do that. Whether society thinks that's right or wrong is something to be debated ongoing in the coming years.
And are the parents of the two girls concerned about how the case will affect their children? Zena Kiprianu.
Absolutely, which is why they wanted their names to remain confidential for the time being, and we were successful in arguing for a suppression order. The reason they want to keep their names confidential is that the children have a less prospect, I suppose, of finding out about it before the parents feel they're ready to sit them down and explain to them what the case was all about and why they brought it, because they certainly have concerns about how the children see it and that they understand that it wasn't about being unwanted, it was about a medical error.
But I guess the potential for damage remains, doesn't it?
Well, it does, but you can minimise it by explaining to your own children when you think they're ready what the case was about.
Well, that was Justin Ellis there from The Wire on Sydney radio station 2SER with a report on the case of the two lesbians who've won $317,000 worth of damages because they got two babies instead of one. Been a lot of press comment on this, hasn't there, Kathy?
Yeah, it's an interesting issue. I mean, there's obviously the point, well, where, you know, you should really be lucky that you have children, and why are you know, wanting money if you're having two of them? I mean, yeah, there's a lot of toing and froing. I think probably the community might be a bit divided over this one as well.
I agree. I mean, it seems to go a big step to actually go to court to contest this. But at the end of the day, it was negligence. And looking at it purely and simply, I think that's definitely the case. And certainly the verdict shows that. But I think what the lawyer said about their sexuality playing a big part in hysteria around the story is certainly... something that has taken place, as far as I can see.
I think, yeah, it wouldn't have made anywhere near as much press, I think, if it had been...
I
can see people shaking their heads in here. It wouldn't have made nearly as much press if it had been a heterosexual couple. There'd have been, I suppose, a certain amount of, they should be, you know, they should be grateful and all the rest of it, but it wouldn't have been such a big issue.
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole issue of, you know, the deserving and the undeserving. And, I mean, let's face it, people go and, you know, we're in the middle of, you know, litigation heaven in Australia now. We sue people for things all the time. Heterosexual people sue doctors for, you know, negligence on all sorts of cases. This is no different. It's only because it's more of a social issue that these people, you know, that some opinion has been that they should be thankful to have children at all, let alone to be, you know, have the gall to be suing a doctor, which is crazy. Really.
Yeah, but I mean, when you look at it from the other angle, there's the whole thing of, you know, if you were... This is obviously when a gay couple, whether gay men or gay women, decide to have children, it's a very planned experience. And they had planned, obviously quite carefully, to have one child. And because of what this doctor did, without their permission, it threw their plans completely off, and they were suddenly faced with a whole load of unplanned expenses. Mm. And regardless of whether they were reasonably well off to begin with or not, I think under those circumstances, I'm kind of sympathetic to them. chasing the money.
Well, that sort of stuff happens. We had a it's not a funny story. We had a story in MX the other week about a woman in the UK who underwent IVF and had 6 babies the first time, went back, God knows why, and had 8.
Yes.
8 the second time. I mean, if there's a case of negligence, I think, you know. But it is, but it's definitely it's a good solid case, definitely.
I think the reporter made a very good point in asking the impact that would have on the children if they ever found out that they'd been taken to court because they essentially didn't want them. I'd be interested to see how that conversation goes later in life.
We'll have to wait for when the child grows up and sues her parents,
yeah, I suppose. Exactly.
Becomes emancipated for, you know, lifelong hardship of negligence.
Well, who knows? Who knows? Okay, well, I think we'll take a short break there.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au or, if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Keeping the GLBTI community up to date, this is The Rainbow Report.
Yes, you're listening to The Rainbow Report on Joy 94.9. I'm Doug Pollard, and with me tonight, Cathy Anderson and Andy Noonan. Now, earlier this year, the Also Foundation announced plans for a rural forum looking at issues affecting rainbow folk in the countryside, which would have run in Ballarat just before Chill Out. But that's now been postponed. There's a message up on the Also website that says, in the wake of the devastating bushfires, the forum's been postponed to allow people to concentrate on other more pressing requirements. Now, joining us in the studio, we welcome the CEO of the Foundation, Lynn Morgain. Lynn, wouldn't it have been better to show our support for the bush by going ahead with this?
Oh, look, that was definitely a strong view and one of the views that was taken into account. And in fact, when we were trying to make the decision, we were working between these two poles. One was that it was inappropriate and insensitive and an imposition at this time, and the other that this was a very poor time to withdraw resources. But at the end of the day, it came down to the capacity of those that were committed to the forum to actually fulfil the responsibilities that they felt they had. And they were essentially country folk who said, we can't do this at this point in time. This simply is not our priority. And I think a lot of that rests on the fact that the forum had been very much intended to work with people who are working in the bush in a whole range of ways. Mm-hmm. And quite aside from the punters, many of whom told us that if the temperature went over 30, they weren't going to leave their houses anyway. And, you know, we can't argue with that. That was our presenters. Those were our speakers.
Yeah.
But we were also very much pitching to workers in the field, and they are absolutely caught up quite appropriately in effectively disaster response work, and it's inappropriate to place demands on their time at this point in time, and we felt that it would be counterproductive.
So you've actually got some people who would have been coming but have now got other work, additional work to do because of what's happened.
Absolutely. A lot of the...
What sort of people would they be?
Largely community health workers, health promotion workers, family support workers, youth support workers, counsellors, nurses. You know, the list goes on. But essentially, any of the staff that are rurally focused and rurally based have been effectively redeployed, either in preparation work to ensure the safety of their own communities, in communities that are not directly affected, but in communities clearly that are directly affected, a number of people have been redeployed to work on the emergency effort.
Lynn, Andy. Can I just ask quickly, if you could give a bit of an overview of what was going to be talked about at...
Sure. Oh, look, sadly I can. I need to be clear here. The forum will run. It's a question of timing. It just won't run right now. But essentially we had, I think, as many as 12 different streams covering young people, families, sexual health, safety, violence, equal opportunity, anti-discrimination, human rights, community engagement, development, and on it went. So it was a very rich program.
So is this including people that aren't necessarily within the GLBTI community as well? or just...
Yeah, look, it was a delicate balance. I mean, in the first instance, the objective of the forum was to allow queer folk in country areas to gather, but the other inevitable sort of sub-audience, if you like, are people working within country areas who are keen to support LGBTIQ folk living in rural settings. So the program was designed very much to allow both things to happen. So to allow a space for queer folk in the country to gather and to organise, but also, secondarily, I think, to ensure that the resources that we often take for granted in the metro setting were brought to the country.
Lynn, is this a rural program of more of a growing area of interest for also? Is it something that you've been doing but not really sort of putting it out there as much?
Yeah, we have the Rural Network. Also's Rural Network has been in train for many years now and has been an effective means of rural people maintaining communication, etc., etc. I think we're ramping it up a bit in terms of our strategic commitment to ensure better resourcing for rural communities. So to that extent, yes, it's a significant activity of also's and, you know, has costs associated with it. So it certainly demonstrates a commitment on the part of also to attempt to do, I guess, what we would call community strengthening work in rural settings.
Do you find it more difficult in rural areas to get these things up and running?
I think people in rural areas find it more difficult to connect and engage and maintain those points of engagement. I mean, the feedback that we get from our country members and allies is very much about the difficulty in sustaining and maintaining community connectedness, to use a much overused phrase. And the examples they cite are that, you know, there aren't the venues, there aren't the organisations, there aren't the funded activities. So how you maintain a dialogue around, you know, health and wellbeing and queer community is more difficult. Having said that, taking a strengths-based approach, it's perfectly clear that country folk have a lot to teach us in terms of what it is to look out for each other. So I certainly wouldn't want to be suggesting that there's a weakness there. I don't think it is. I just think it's a difference.
Yeah, well, I think it's to do with critical mass as well, isn't it? Because it's fairly easy in the city. I say fairly easy. I wouldn't say it was all that easy, even in the city, to get together sufficient numbers of people in one place to organise an event or something like that, whereas... in bush areas, people are much more scattered, and, you know, to connect them up is much more difficult. I mean, you have things happening, say, in places like Bendigo or Ballarat, but the people who go to those are drawn from a very wide catchment area. And, of course, you've got the kind of draining effect of Melbourne anyway, that people, you know, in the last resort will come to Melbourne for social events, certainly. Come down here for the weekend or whatever.
Yeah.
So when do you think this forum will kind of resume? I mean, it's a bit like saying how long is a piece of string and how long the fire's going to go on.
My current favoured date is July, but that's a Lynn Morgane special, so I'm speaking out of turn. I mean, no one but I have thought that's a good idea. So, of course, it's up to the organising group to regroup and consider when seems appropriate. But what you can be certain of is it will be cooler.
Well, yes, I mean, we've got that to think about with chill out, of course, as well. We don't know what the weather's going to be, although I have looked at the long-range weather forecast and it says it's going to start raining the day after chill out.
Very good.
So
close call.
I'll bring my umbrella to Carnival Day then,
shall I? So I'm hoping that's absolutely spot on, but, you know, this far out, you can't rely on those weather forecasts. Okay, well, thanks for coming in today, Lynn.
Pleasure.
And let's hope that this does come off, because it is important to make connections out there in the rural areas. I mean, I wish we could broadcast out into those rural areas too, because something like Joy would be even more important for connecting people up when they're scattered, as they are in country areas, than it is in the city. I often think being restricted to a city licence is not that wonderful a notion. Now, that's the new also directory you're waving at me there?
It seems that I am.
Oh, would you like to tell us about that before you go?
Give it a plug. Go on.
Give it a plug.
Well,
go
how
on,
can
yes.
I not? It is so beautiful. How can I not? And look, there's so much more than the cover. I guess it's just to let people know that the directory, its 20th edition, is mm-hmm. now on the streets, so to speak, and bigger and better than ever. So that's
certainly
just
looks quite a chunky publication this
yes,
year.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It continues to grow every year. But I guess while we're talking about community connection, it remains one of the more vital and stock standard publications available to let people get in touch with what's available in their community. And to that extent, we're much indebted to our business colleagues for that. Were it not for the advertisers in the directory, there are numerous young people in schools and ordinary folk accessing things like community health centres and hospitals and the like who would not have access to the kind of information that they do in the directory. So it's really a bit of a thank you to the community, I suppose, for continuing to support the directory, because throughout the year we get numerous requests from oftentimes youth workers, school nurses, mm-hmm. counsellors and others who continue to use it as a pretty key resource. And it's really down to our businesses that that happens at all.
Now, it's available both as a printed thing and it's also online?
It is online, yep. This will be the second year that it's been online. It's available, I guess, at all the usual outlets, if you like. But I suppose the important message is that, and we continue to do this every year, is that if people would like to see the directory somewhere that it's not, all they need to do is give us a ring and we will do everything we can to get a stock of directories out to them. So I just finished talking to someone on the phone. He said, there are none in the West. And luckily I live in the West. So by tonight there will be a box of directories
load up
in
the
West.
And off you go.
Yeah. And that's the way we work it. So please let us know if you'd like access.
Okay. Well, as I say, thank you very much for joining us tonight, Lynn.
My pleasure.
And we'll keep our fingers crossed that the forum takes place as soon as possible.
It will.
Okay. You're listening to The Rainbow Report on Joy 94.9. In a moment, we'll be talking about the bushfires and the many appeals and fundraisers our community is mounting, including a very special one called Australia United. There's a question raised in all this, of course, which we will discuss. Who should we give our money to? Should we give it to people? Should we give it to wildlife? Should we give it to the Red Cross? Should we give it to Vinnies? Should we give it to the Salvos? What do you think?
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station.
Informing, entertaining and provoking, this is The Rainbow Report.
And this is Doug Pollard helping me out in the studio. Andy Noonan from Southern Star and Kathy Anderson from MX, I think we can safely say.
We can say from MX.
Give, you a bit of a plug.
Yeah, from Lotto as well. Look, I've got many
Lotto
hats.
And yes,
yeah.
Many hats indeed. Now, these terrible bushfires have generated an unbelievable outpouring of giving. And the gay community, as you just heard, including Joy and the Also Foundation, has been no exception. My next guest, Felicity Brinschwitz, has actually been working at, I think, the Healesville Relief Centre, organising food and clothing donations and stuff like that. She's also formed something called Australia United, a new group to march at this year's Mardi Gras parade in recognition of those affected by the bushfires. And the group is inviting members of the community to join them. Welcome, Felicity. We'll get to the group in the moment, but can you tell us a bit about the situation on the ground up at Healesville?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me, Doug. Look, things have been devastating, to say the least. It's been very hectic up in Healesville. Things have started to get a bit of normalcy up there now. There is the concern that the donation drives will slowly drop off with clothes and relief with food and whatnot. We're hoping that people understand that, you know, the influx, the sudden influx obviously needs to be managed, and that needs to continue for the next couple of months moving forward. Obviously, if people are turned away, if they can hold on to those items and then forward them on in the coming weeks and months as advertised and when required. So, look, it is organised chaos. People are getting the relief that they need. We're no longer having people sleeping in the relief centres as such. Organised accommodation has taken over from that. We're still finding that people are needing to, obviously, source urgent items and financial assistance. And that's obviously coming in the way of most of the donations that are coming through with most of the appeals. So, one of the appeals at the moment is basically to form a group just to honour those people who've been touched by the the actual deaths that have occurred, and also to honour the amazing volunteer efforts. There's been CFA, there's been the Salvos, there's been numerous organisations and just general people in the public who've come to me and said, how do I help? What do I do? I'm here from Perth, or I'm here from Mount Martha, or from Lilydale. People have come from far and wide and really want to help. And this is something that I noticed early on in the piece, is that it's such an amazing thing to experience that and to see how people come together. And I thought, you know, it's so suited to the theme this year of United Nations with Mardi Gras. And as much as we're going to be having an amazing time up there, we just wanted to pay honour to these people and to the efforts.
Now, I understand Vic Presence isn't going up this year, so you'll actually be the Victorian Presence, if I can.
Yes, we will be the Victorian contingent. Look, there are a few others that are marching and who do a great job, but unfortunately, due to low numbers, and we put that down to the economic crisis, that we just haven't been able to get the numbers that we require to put on the spectacular show that we're renowned for. But that's not to say that people who have been involved with Vic Presence, or for people who haven't for that matter, can still take part and march with a non-paying group such as Australia United. We won't be doing the razzle-dazzle, as I've been saying to everyone in the press, but it's an important contingent nonetheless.
Yeah, so I understand you're going to be marching in black with and wearing the yellow ribbon.
That's right. Initially, we were just saying to people, if they just came dressed in black from head to toe, and we would provide the yellow ribbons. I've been very fortunate in gaining the support from Silke Bader from Lottl, who has since gone ahead and managed to fund us with the costs for an amazing banner and for black V-neck T-shirts, which are going to have the yellow ribbon printed on the front, and just the mention of how basically Australia United is there to remember and to rebuild. So not only are we there to pay honour to the fallen victims, but to move forward with that whole recovery and rebuilding process. So to Lottl, we send out a very big thank you, because it's just making our presence so much more known in the gay and lesbian community. And I believe they're doing a double Mardi Gras feature coming up,
I believe.
Maybe that's out next week. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there'll be more information in that, but yeah, we're very honoured to have them on board.
Mm. How many have you got marching already? Because obviously you say your numbers are down for Vic Presence. Have you gathered a lot more support from people now that it's more of a bushfire appeal?
Yeah, look, I've had numerous people ringing up and just people touching base with me, you know, out in the scene, and it's an unfortunate thing because it's happened so late in the piece. We had actually registered with New Mardi Gras, and obviously because they have put in place the order of the parade, certain numbers have been limited to some of the later contingents that have come in. Unfortunately, we are limited to 30. Right. We do hope to perhaps persuade New Mardi Gras, if they're listening, that we expect to have more than 30 people who want to show their support. So it's not just for Victorian people as well. We want to get the message out that if you're coming from interstate or for overseas, that they can take part.
Okay, now you've decided to direct any money you raise on this march to the Bendigo Bank Community Enterprise Fund.
That's right, yes.
Now, before we take the conversation any further, we've actually got a representative of Bendigo Bank, Mr. Owen Davies, on the line at the moment, and he can explain to us what the Bendigo Bank Community Enterprise Fund is. Good evening, Owen.
Hello, Doug.
So, yeah, this Community Enterprise Fund isn't something specially set up for the bushfires or anything. It's something the Bendigo Bank does all the time, isn't it?
That's right, Doug. It's the bank's charitable foundation. So it's established with all the legal requirements around a foundation. It's able to take tax-effective contributions and distribute those, as the trustees see fit.
Now, you are running two appeals at the moment, aren't you? One for the floods and one for the fires. Can people be sure that if they want to give to the one or the other, it will actually go to their designated fund?
How ironic, Doug. What a continent we live in when we're running fire appeals and flood appeals at the one time.
It is bizarre, isn't it?
It brings back that poem, doesn't it? The land of, searing droughts and flooding rain.
Indeed.
Look, we are running consecutive appeals, Doug, but if people go online, they will see the two appeals listed quite separately there at bendigobank.com.au, and they can contribute where they like online. Similarly, if they go into any branch of Bendigo Bank, they'll be able to stipulate that they're contribution goes into the bushfire fund. Doug, they can also, if they elect, indicate to the trustees where they would like to see that money go. If they would like to support a particular region of Victoria, then they can indicate that preference to the trustees, who may be guided by their preference.
Now, just give us a sense of how the community the fund works. I understand that what happens is that you have local boards of your community banks, and they are the ones to whom people apply for monies from this fund, and then the local people on this board kind of make a recommendation as to whether this is to be supported or not. Is that going to work the same way with the bushfire appeal?
Essentially, Doug, yes. I mean, look, one of the great attributes that Bendigo Bank has is that we have very close affiliations with all the communities in which we have branches. More than half our branches are actually owned and operated by local communities. So we're very well connected at that local community level. What our trustees of the charitable foundation will be doing, and are in fact already doing, is sitting down with community leaders in the fire areas and asking for their recommendations about where best the funds can be distributed to the greatest effect. So we're very, very close to the people on the ground, and anybody who does choose to donate through Bendigo Bank can be well assured that their donation will be put to the very best effect at the local level. And I should say too, Doug, that the bank is absorbing all the foundation's costs in running the bushfire appeal, so that every dollar donated will reach the victims.
I understand there's a fair amount of money actually come in already for the bushfire appeal. A friend of mine actually works for you, and he said the money is just pouring across your counters.
Yes, look, it's, as of 5 o'clock this evening, Doug, it was sitting at $5.1 million, which...
Wow. Well, yeah. That's huge.
It is, it's massive. And look, it's, you know, we're really fortunate to work for a bank like Bendigo, because ours really is a greater community around the Bendigo Bank network, and you know, this is such a great indication of the way our community rallies around in times of need.
Mm. I think also we ought to say that the kind of things that the Community Enterprise Fund gets behind, you aim to get behind sustainable things. In other words, it's not one of these things where people rush in with a bucket of money, set something up, and then falls over. You actually try and get behind things with a long-term future to them.
That's absolutely correct, Doug. And in fact, the whole business strategy of the bank is to feed into community prosperity. And look, that makes sense, really, doesn't it? Because you can't run a good business in an unsuccessful community.
This is
so
true.
We think if we feed into building more sustainable communities, our business has to be more sustainable over the long term itself. So it just makes good sense.
Yeah, Cathy Anderson, you had to come in here.
Yeah. Oh, and in practical terms, you've got 5.1 million now. Say you get another, you know, 2 million, whatever you end up with. How, in a practical sense, does that money get distributed? And is it only, you know, in communities in and around Bendigo, or how does it actually work?
Cathy, actually, more than $250,000 has already been distributed by the trustees. And in the short term, that's gone to some of those immediate needs like food, shelter, and grief counselling, actually, which is an area easily overlooked. But these fires have been extremely traumatic for many, many people, not just victims, but for firefighters and emergency workers as well.
Yeah, and it's not just the fires in your area, is it, that you're dealing with? It's the ones down in Gippsland and so on and so forth.
That's correct, Doug. The money will be distributed across all the fire areas. In fact, already the trustees have distributed some money statewide, for example, through the National Association of Loss and Grief Victoria Incorporated, have received $10,000 for counselling services. So that's statewide. Money has made its way to Gippsland, into central Victoria. You know, our home city of Bendigo here actually was devastated by fires. We lost 57 homes and one unfortunate man here in Bendigo. So some money has gone into Bendigo, and money's also been distributed into the Yarra Valley. And we'll continue to ensure that all areas receive support.
Okay, Felicity.
Oh, and I've just wanted to raise also the awareness to listeners that you also donate to the Victorian Animal Aid Trust. I know that there's a lot of animal lovers out there who are concerned about, you know, the wildlife and also people, people's loved ones, who, you know, their loved pets and so forth. Is that something on the agenda moving forward as well?
Yes, Felicity, it is. And look, if people want to donate through our branches, one of the preferences they can indicate to the trustees is to spend money on animal relief. And in fact, the trustees have already allocated $5,000 to the Victorian Animal Aid Trust for some short-term work, and more funds will certainly flow towards animal relief. It's perhaps one of the great unrecognised tragedies of these fires.
I think I was talking to someone from Wildlife Victoria earlier today. Wildlife too is getting actually a very large amount of money is pouring into them as well. They've suddenly found themselves with more members over the last couple of weeks than they've ever had in their previous existence. I understand it. It's just everybody wants to help with absolutely everything. Owen, thank you very much for your time tonight, and we will encourage everybody to pop into their local Bendigo bank, I think.
Thank you, Owen.
Thanks, guys. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, even under these circumstances. I guess, you know, if anything good has emerged from this, it's the tremendous outpouring from community across Australia.
It is indeed. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Owen
guys.
Davies from Bendigo Bank. Now, that's where you're sending your money, isn't it, Felicity?
That's right. We wanted to choose a recipient that basically could put their finger in every pie, so to speak. And with the current concerns of certain facilitators, how do I put it delicately, having a few political issues in regards to blood donations from gay men, we wanted to pick something that was very neutral, and I believe that choosing that the money go to the foundation is probably one of the better options. And it's not just going to one area as such, it is being divvied out, and they're sitting down and they're talking to the people required, and on a grassroots level finding out what is really needed.
And it strikes me that if you rattle your tins very successfully up at Mardi Gras, you could actually go into a local Bendigo bank branch and say, here's a load of money for the fund, but we want it to go to gay issues that in your in the localities.
Look, that may be possible. that hasn't been addressed at this point, but look, we have organised the tins to go up and meet us in Sydney, so hopefully we'll get a good response from, I believe the crowd last year was up to 500,000.
It's huge, last year's 30th anniversary.
We're hoping to get some support there from people coming to see the parade.
So, obviously, people who are at the parade can donate, because I'm really excited about this, because the Red Cross has been the, you know, the premier place for you to make donations. It's, you know, got over 100 million now. It's, you know, it's mainstream. But obviously, there are obvious issues with the donation of blood by gay men, which we've covered on this show as well. So for people out there who want to donate to this fund, how do they actually do it? Do they go to the Bendigo Bank website? Or
the best thing to do would be to log on to the Bendigo Bank website, which is simply www.bendigobank.com.au. That can list their local branches, which they can simply go into and donate there over the counter. Or if they were wanting to know a bit more information, if they had specific questions, for example, is it going to the Victorian Relief Food Bank or the SES workers or future employment opportunities, that kind of thing, if they ring 1300 366 666, that's the specific information line for the bushfire appeal that is being held by the Bendigo Bank.
And what's that number again?
It's 1300 366 666.
Okay. Well, that seems like a very good place to be sending our money to. You're listening to the Rainbow Report on Joy 94.9 with Doug Pollard.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au.
Informing, entertaining and provoking. This is the Rainbow Report.
And this is Doug Pollard bringing it to you. With me in the studio, Andy Noonan, Cathy Anderson and Felicity Brinschwitz of Australia United. And we'll come back to Felicity in a moment. But now it's time to welcome back our resident drag diva. And if you saw her latest show, you'll know she truly earned that title with her singing. Que Sera, with a look this week beneath a rather soot-stained bonnet.
Thank you, Doug. Yes, it has been a tough week down under. Apart from Kev's monster of a stimulus package, We've also, of course, had to deal with the tragedy of this vicious firestorm in the bush. Now, while there are many jokes to be had around Kev's package, hey, it's big, but not nearly as big as Obama's, the same cannot be said for the fires. There's nothing funny about whole communities who have lost absolutely everything to a bushfire, the likes of which we've never seen before. Global warming, trumped-up Greens policies, complacent city folk in the throes of a tree change. There's been plenty of commentary around this tragedy, but no amount of rational debate can erase the fact that hundreds of folk have tragically died. Here in the queer community, there has been just a little banter around the gay folk directly affected by the fires. Though, thankfully, the majority of us instinctively understand that this event is far bigger than sexual politics. Yes, there are gay people who have died, but overwhelmingly, the majority of the folk who've lost their lives are mums and dads and kids, grandparents, heterosexual lovers, teachers, artists, nurses. It shows a great maturing of our community, I think, that we've been able to reach outside our sexual identity with compassion to raise money along with the rest of Australia. To do otherwise would be inhumane. Just this week, I've been involved in two such events. The first at DT's Hotel, where Saturday night hostess Ms. Dulcie DeJure led a room full of homos and their friends in a minute silence as a mark of respect for the lives lost. Bar a couple of idiots in the beer garden, the 200-strong crowd lowered their head, and you could have heard a pin drop. Can you believe it? The other event was at the Exchange Hotel, where every drag queen and her better half turned out for the cause. Thousands was raised, and the generosity from the Exchange was overwhelming, the spirit defiantly uplifting. When this kitty arrives on the doorstep of the Red Cross, assuming that's where it's going to go, they need to be reminded loud and clear just where it has come from. Perhaps then they'll revise their bigoted policies on blood donations. On a personal level, the tragic events of this past week have brought back memories of growing up in the bush and my grandmother's tales of being burnt out at least twice in her lifetime. Everything was lost in the fire, she said, except for the silverware, cutlery, pots and pans, and a few items of jewellery, a beautiful jade ring, I remember. It's a sombre memory, but one laced with sheer pluck and the defiance of rural folk. I'm Kay Sarar, and all of a sudden I'm sitting on a log in a Fred McCubbin painting and wondering just how much we understand about the beauty and severity of this wild country we call home.
Well, thank you very much for that, Kay. I certainly feel pretty much like that where I live out in Eltham. I sit there and look out at all the trees and think, hey, there's a house under every one of those trees. You know, I can't see them. And if a bushfire came through here, how the hell would I get out?
Very slowly, probably.
No, hardly at all, I think, with all the cul-de-sacs and everything else. All this fundraising, I mean, I just want to talk about that, this whole fundraising thing in general, because it's been quite astounding, the range of events and the range of things that people have been raising money for. You mentioned the Red Cross. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there have been some questions about the Red Cross and whether that was the right place to send it to. I've been hearing from some very pro-wildlife people, for example, that wildlife is getting forgotten in the midst of all this, with all the money pouring into taking care of people, and that's not my understanding from what I've heard from talking to Wildlife Victoria, but you know, some people do feel that way. Do you think this is going to make any long-term difference, though? Is this just going to be a huge flash in the pan? We'll ease our conscience, empty our pockets, and then just go back to doing things all the same until it happens again?
Well, isn't it a problem that a lot of the people who've lost their homes, because they're rural folk suffering hard times because of the drought, actually don't have house and contents insurance?
That's true.
From what I see, obviously there's emergency shelter and the tent cities and all that kind of stuff, but it's really a matter of those people who aren't covered. You know, rebuilding
And what are they going to rebuild with? Yeah. Well, I think part of the problem, and there was an article in The Australian that brought this very much to the fore, and it said, if we rebuild in the bush, it's got to be fireproof houses or as near as we can make it.
Yeah, and build bunkers. And, I mean, you know, MX, we're getting all that kind of stuff at the moment too.
But the thing about that is that's going to make it very expensive. And the thing about places like, you know, I live in Eltham, and you know, places like St Andrews and Cottles Bridge and Kinglake are kind of a hop and a skip and a jump from where I live. And in fact, we nearly bought in Kinglake when we moved up there. If you look at the people who live there and you look at the setup in those places, the people who live in a lot of these places are people who can't afford to live any closer. They're living out there because in those slightly isolated, well out on the fringe communities, housing is cheap.
Yeah, but the other thing too about this is an incredibly large natural disaster. I mean, how much can you fireproof as much as you like, but you know, a lot of people move to the bush because they like the bush. They don't want to have to, you know, remove the trees, and they don't want to, you know, have to maybe spend the money on fireproofing their house. I don't know. I think you can do what you can, but really, it's like the floods. I mean, you can't floodproof your house.
No, but for example, as I was saying to the local paper, rang me up and asked me for my opinion about, you know, the fire prevention in Eltham, and I said, basically, we don't seem to have any. You know, I get little cards and fridge magnets about all kinds of things coming through my door about what to do if I find a snake in my garden, or how I can't cut down a native tree. I haven't had a thing from the CFA. I haven't had anything about where the bushfire refuges are.
Clearing your gutters.
I haven't had any sort of, you know, specific advice, you know.
A shock situation. Where suddenly everyone has woken up and said, wow, this is a massive problem, and at the scale which we've never seen before, this particular disaster. But I think a lot of people just didn't realise that they didn't realise that living in the bush could be so dangerous.
Well, that again is the problem. I think so many people who are basically city folk, like me, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean,
who know nothing really about living in the real bush. But then, I mean, Eltham's not real bush either. But you know, it's a bushfire-prone area. But what do I know about bushfires?
Well, that's when I'm from Sydney, and in '98 we had the fires that destroyed the Royal National Park, and that was in the Sutherland Shire, and that's a very tree-y area, if it's a tree's word. I remember sitting one night, we were basically locked in with the fire, and we looked out onto a sort of escarpment, and the fire was pretty much coming for the bank of houses, and we all live there in suburbia, but it's very, very built up with trees. Mm-hmm. And had the wind not changed, we would have had this massive fireball coming up and destroying all their houses. As it was, it turned around, jumped a river, and destroyed 60 houses in Denali and Como. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, we had no idea. We're all standing around with our hoses. You know, I mean, that's ridiculous.
Well,
dog in the car, ready to go. But I mean,
I was talking to Rob Mitchell earlier on. He lives out in Beaufort, which is somewhere beyond Ballarat kind of thing, and he's on a rural property. They've actually got two fire trucks of their own. He and his partner have two fire trucks on the property, and you know, their own dam and all the rest of it. And some of their relatives, in fact, were in Wallan and places and Kilmore when the fires broke out, but they got out okay. As he said, having seen what that fire was like and having heard the stories from the people who were actually there, he said those fire trucks are just a complete waste of time. He said you might as well just stand in front of it and piss on it for all the effect you're going to have, you know, when it's
imagery.
Maybe
you can have a fire truck party. When we put the fire trucks to good use. We use them in the chill out parade or something
like that. Now, I just want to kind of wheel Felicity back in here for a moment, because this trip up to Sydney. First off, if people want to get involved with Australia United, how do they do it?
Well, they can touch base with me, and they can give me a call on Melbourne 03 9847 0349, and I'll keep the press informed as to ways in which we were going to be meeting and how they can collect their tins and their t-shirts, etc. But basically, if people can just, you know, make their plans to get up to Sydney and to have that time ready to join us prior to the parade, and we'll be ready to go.
And that's it. There went another hour. My guests tonight were Lynn Morgain from the Also Foundation, Felicity Brinchwitz from Australia United, and we had a special report from Justin Ellis from 2SER Sydney. Helping me out in the studio were Kathy Anderson and Andy Noonan, not to mention a lightly smoked slice of Kay Sarah. Big thanks to you. Big thanks to Owen Davies of the Bendigo Bank. The show is produced by Bianca Johnston, technical production by Michael Bayliss. I'm Doug Pollard, and I'll be back next week with another edition of The Rainbow Report.
This has been a Joy 94.9 News and Current Affairs presentation.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.